frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch cats fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Ignition sequence start. 3, 2, 1.
Houston, we have a problem.
We got to be on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue.
What you're seeing here is a mirage. Mirage.
What's going on, everyone? It's Jarenism, back with another video for you today. I've got an open letter, a question, and a request for NASA. On behalf of the American people who have funded your entire program, there's something that needs to be said. If everything that you've told us and everything that you've said you've done is true, then I think there's no reason why there shouldn't be a camera on the moon. NASA, why haven't you done this yet? What possible reason could you have for not doing something that can only yield positive results? It's an absolute slap in the face to the people who live on Earth. Let's think about this for a second. Let's talk about the good that it would do and the damage it does with every single day that passes without NASA completing such a basic and essential mission. So NASA would need to launch a Moonlander craft that would head to the moon.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
And if we're going to discuss finances, we can just look back to 2007 and recall the launch of the mission Themis, a moon orbiter that has been measuring the auroras in the Earth's magnetosphere and still is operating today. So that craft has been in operation for 10 years and it cost NASA $173 million. So a launch of a simple craft carrying 5 or 6 4K cameras would cost much less. But let's say the cost is $159 million. That's only 3 days of the NASA budget, which is $53 million a day. So 3 days worth of the budget, and we already have our $159 million. So we launch it. We launch it up, and we land it on the moon. And when we land it right next to the Apollo 16 landing spot. You can then show us the LEM and the lunar rover sitting exactly where they were left over 50 years ago. This could finally prove your moon landings. And I've already heard people saying, oh, you'll just call that fake too, just like you did the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter photos of the landing spots. Well, there is a huge difference between live video footage showing the rover and the LEM sitting on the moon and these images believers want to call proof. If these images are proof to you that the rover and the LEM, as well as the footprints and the paths of the astronauts seen from 50 miles above the moon, if these pixel changes and arrows are proof, then you better start believing in the proof of Bigfoot. You better start believing that this here is proof of two UFOs in the sky. You better believe the proof that I spent 7 hours on the roof of the White House last week, and the week before, I walked on water from California to Hawaii. Yes, I know, I did get a little bit tired, and I got picked up. You can see where that happened right there in the middle. Then the boat drove us a little bit forward, and then I completed the journey with a buddy. And if you look closely, you'll see proof of that too, as there's actually two paths. So, that being said, let's look at all the positive effects that would be a direct result of NASA placing a camera on the moon. Number one, set it and forget it. Since we always see the same side of the moon, all you need to do is land there at the Apollo 16 landing site, point the camera at Earth, and forget it. That camera view would always show the Earth from the moon. Number two, you could prove the moon landings. Numbers vary, but some polls have it at 7% and some have it as high as 40%. What percentage of the world's population doubts that NASA ever went and landed man on the moon? Well, NASA, this would be your chance. Land the craft near the Apollo 16 landing position, pan the camera, and show us the LEM and the rover. Number three, you can actually change flat earthers' minds. It's going to be real hard to deny that the Earth is a ball when people see from the moon the ball Earth spinning in space. One of the reasons many people are flat earthers is because none of us have ever seen the things we're asking NASA to show. Number four, you'll be the first ever live stream of the Earth from space, seeing the Earth in its entirety. Number five, it would be the first time we would get non-composite images of our Earth. How can there be no non-composite images taken of where we live? This would solve that problem. Number six, it would be the first live stream from space to show the Earth spinning in space. Seems like something we should have already. We don't. This would solve that. Number eight, easy and clear proof and observed data, empirical evidence of what's going on during eclipses. No need for your misaligned diagrams, for your scales being incredibly off, for your backwards spinning Earths. This would show students, adults, parents, and teachers, everyone, exactly what's going on during an eclipse, because you're watching live what's happening during an eclipse. Be it a lunar eclipse or a solar eclipse, we would get to see both from the moon. We would either see the moon's shadow appear on the Earth during a solar eclipse, or we would see the Earth block out the sun during a lunar eclipse. Number nine, think of the education opportunities that this presents. The time-lapse videos, the video footage, using it in schools, showing children rather than telling them exactly what's going on in the sky above them. Would you rather them read it in a book or actually see a live video going on as they learn in the sky above them? Number 10, payback. All of NASA's money comes from the citizens of this country. The very least that they can do, the very least, is provide video footage of where we live from space. This is crazy that we're having this discussion almost 60 years since NASA was created. 11. Science denial. There's a lot of people who deny science. This would help to reduce that number by showing things rather than telling people. It's hard for people to deny things that are being shown to them right in their face. Number 12. This would be the number one live stream of all time. It would be seen by more people than any live stream ever made. Number 13. If NASA has problems with the cost of this mission, by simply allowing advertising agencies or companies, corporations, businesses, stores, Walmart, Target, AT&T, to buy one-hour time slots where they would have their logo on the screen during the live stream. Over the course of 10 years, you could figure out how much money NASA could make, and they would actually make money if they employed this kind of ad revenue generation. Maybe I'm the only one. I mean, can you believe we are having this discussion 60 years after NASA was invented and 50 years since we sent men to the moon? No photos of Earth. No live video of Earth. No video of the Earth spinning. No video on the moon to show us eclipses. No 24/7 view from space. Are you okay with this? And if so, why? So there should be a poll available right now. Would love to see what side you're on. The rational side, who looks at what NASA claims to be capable of and questions why in the world is there no camera on the moon. Or are you on the other side? The side of the fanboys, the ones that give NASA the benefit of the doubt that they do not deserve in any way. The side that continues to protect them rather than pressing them with issues like this. Make your pick. Do you stand with humanity? Or those who have enslaved the minds of humanity with lies and deception, with false teachings and make-believe heroism from agents in disguise? Hey NASA, why haven't you done this yet?
Today we have with us a group of students among America's best. To you we say, we've only completed a beginning, the beginning, the beginning. We leave you much that is undone, undone, undone. There are great ideas undiscovered, breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers.
So, do you want to know my opinion? It's only my opinion, but I honestly cannot begin to imagine how anyone can see this any other way. Because they can get you Curiosity on Mars. They can build you any satellite you want. They can land on comets and observe the sun from the Lagrange point. They can operate Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 13 billion miles away with no issue at all. They can fly through the rings of Saturn with Cassini and orbit Jupiter with Juno. But for some reason, they can't put a camera on the moon. They can't take a video of the Earth.
So some of those are painted on.
It is Photoshopped, but it's has to be.
The reason we have no videos, no pictures, no moon base, no photos is simple.
Problem is we don't have the technology to do that anymore. We used to, but we destroyed that technology, and it's a painful process to build it back again.
Because we can't get but a few hundred miles from Earth. NASA can't go anywhere, just like all of us. So rather than teach people to be good to each other, and help each other, and make life easier for each other, they tell you a story.
Did you copy? Over.
About a spinning ball flying through endless space around a giant ball of nuclear fusion. 1 million times the size of the Earth. In a universe 14 billion years old, in our Milky Way galaxy, 100,000 light years across, and the whole thing is filled with dark energy and dark matter and black holes, none of which has ever been observed. That's absurd.
Well, we sit and we talk about things ahead of time.
This is where you're using the window of the spacecraft to appear to be the Earth far away.
And how, you ask? How does NASA get away with these lies? Because people love the fantasy. They will never ever see any piece of that fantasy in reality. They don't care. No one will ever stand on Mars. No one will ever travel in space. No one will ever go to the moon or to Jupiter or Saturn, because it's all a mental prison. And the inmates think the prison is home. If I'm wrong, NASA, put a camera on the frickin' moon. Why in the world haven't you done that yet?
Had this analyzed. And this is the window. And you're in a stated.
Well, you're talking to the wrong guy. Why don't you talk to the administrator at NASA? We're passengers. We're guys going on a flight.
I know for a fact.
Be kind to each other. Don't lie to each other. Don't make up fantasy worlds and tell people it's reality. This has been Jarenism. Till next time.
Another prediction of doomsday. If conspiracy theorists are to be believed, a planet will clash with Earth in September this year. David Mead, who authored Planet X, 2017 arrival, asserts that the planet Nibiru, also known as Planet X, will crash into Earth on September 23rd, 2017. On Monday, August 21st, 2017, all of North America will witness an eclipse of the sun for the first time in 99 years, where moon will pass in front of the sun, casting darkness across swatches of Earth's surface. It is called Great American Eclipse and is once in a lifetime celestial spectacle. Though scientists are excited over the revelation but refuse to buy the claim, since Mead earlier said that Nibiru will mark the end of Earth in October. But now he has fixed his mind on September. only until he changes his mind again. However, NASA has reacted by saying that Nibiru and other stories about wayward planets are an internet hoax. There is no factual basis for these claims. Hence, there is no need for any panic. News Desk.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazazradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. So, today's Mad Science show is live. Alright, got a question for NASA. Well, first I got a statement. Alright, well, if I had access to $53 million a day and a team of engineers, there is not one single issue on this planet that I could not have resolved by now. All right, so that video clip that you heard there and there earlier was about a guy named Jaronism who honestly believes the earth is flat. All right, well, that's all right. He can, that's, you know, I don't know. I ain't been far enough away from the earth to see whether it's flat, whether it's round, whether it's dodecahedron or whatever. However, in 1969, we supposedly went to the moon. And haven't been back for 50 years. All right, so I'm thinking, all right, modern day society, you got access to HD video technology and all kinds of cool, nifty toys and such. So right now would be a good time to basically end all the conspiracy theories and place a live video camera on the moon. See, I've been saying this for quite some time. Just happened upon Jaronism's video where he's asking NASA to put a video camera up on the moon so that we can like look back at the place where we live, see whether it's flat, whether it's round, whether it's dodecahedron is square or triangle or whatever, you know. But $53 million a day, folks, come on. You got all these people in this world supposedly starving to death around the world. You got people in just about every nation having all kinds of issues and troubles and trials and tribulations that they got to go through. And, you know, $53 million is a lot of funds. That's a lot of cash that should be able to somehow or another, because they were able to send a probe all the way to Pluto into the deep, dark space, take a picture, send it back, and so on and so forth. Using some pretty amazing technology, by the way, thermoelectric generator that was able to produce over 200 watts of power that was able to not only send a radio signal through the deep darkness of space and basically send a picture back that was then in turn sent out to you so that you could see what the planet Pluto looked like. You know, there was one point in time where they said Pluto was a planet, and then they said it wasn't a planet, and then it is a planet again. We don't know. Okay, so nonetheless. The second one that you heard was basically a guy talking about the conspiracy theory of Planet X, a.k.a. Nibiru, that was going to fly around sometime next month, I guess, 21st of next month. Well, actually, the 21st of this month. I believe we're supposed to get a big solar eclipse, a lunar eclipse. It's supposed to block out the Earth and such, light out of the Earth, make it look like nighttime during the daytime. And then on the 21st, Nibiru is going to come through and blow us all up, man. It's going to shred us, man. It's going to shake us upside down and destroy the planet and such. And NASA says, well, no, don't worry about that. That's just an internet conspiracy theory and so on and so forth. Well, now we're back to the camera again. See, if you had a camera on the moon and you could basically aim this camera in any direction, you could kind of like see what was coming in your direction or whatever towards the deal. And, you know, when you say, look, they say there's a Planet X out there. Look, there ain't no planet over there. You can see it's live video feed or something like that. So come on, folks, $53 million a day, and it's been 50 years. We've been to the moon, and, you know, you could stop all the conspiracy theories by shining the camera and the light over there. Look, see, there's the old moon lander there that we had, and there's the leftovers of the, launch vehicle and such, and you can see the tracks. Hey, look, there's even a footprint from an astronaut or something like that. It's not that big of a deal if we can get cameras into space all the way to Pluto to get one on the moon, is what I'm saying. So it's a reasonable request for somebody who's getting a lot of taxpayer money to be able to just prove to everybody and, you know, put up or shut up. Show everybody, look, you guys been hassling us for years saying that we never went to the moon. Now, here's the proof that if you don't like it, then shut up, you know. But, no, it ain't going down like that. We ain't got no camera on the moon. We're probably not going to get a camera on the moon. But if we do get a camera on the moon, I'd be happy because I would love to see where the astronauts first put their feet down in the soil. So, with all that said and all that stuff going on, $53 million a day would produce a lot of different technologies that I'm understanding that NASA has several patents on all kinds of stuff that they have researched because of the money that the and the research to go to space and satellites and all that kind of stuff. And here we are on the Mad Science Show talking about, you know, stuff like why it is everybody's still paying the electric bill. Because I said that I was going to prove once and for all, beyond a shadow of a doubt, energy is free. And I believe we've more than done that multiple times. But, nonetheless, you still need a working physical device that somebody can put a voltmeter on and show, look, hey, we're getting either more power out than we put in, or this is 100% efficient, or look, it doesn't pollute, or anything like that. So with $53 million a day, I would give you a vehicle that run on pure distilled water utilizing technology knowledge from Stan Myers way back in the 1970s, but with a lot of a more advanced technology now, using everything from air conditioner technology to, you know, the internal combustion engine, compression, ignition, and all kinds of vaporization technology. Things that already exist, that have existed for quite some time, that would give you the perfect running internal combustion engine, the perfect running fuel, and so on. But, you know, I don't have access to $53 million a day and an army of engineers that can, you know, start to work on these problems that should have already been resolved. See, we always continuously have to listen to the liberal side of the view of everything out there, talking about how the planet is heating up, and guys like Al Gore out there saying that global warming is going to melt the ice caps and we're all going to drown and the polar bears are going to die and so on and so forth. And we always have the Save the Tree people out there with their wooden sticks and their paper sign protesting Save the Planet. Then we have other environmentalists out there talking about how the planet's all polluted and we need to find results and all that kind of stuff. Well, I'm sitting here telling you I'm getting kind of impatient because of the science has already been there. Has been there for many, many, many years to resolve every single issue under the sun. We have access to the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. We have an internet that we can talk to one another clear across international boundaries, and we're not able to resolve issues such as somebody starving in the world or homelessness or whatever. I'm calling shenanigans. I'm saying that this is yeah, it's not right. Because $53 million a day, I'd have one device after another out there on the table that could do exactly what I'm saying. Now, I put a video out here. There's actually a link posted in the chat room of me skimming off some duckweed off my pond. Duckweed? What's that? Oh, it's, you know, it's just this obnoxious stuff that'll kill your pond if there ain't nothing in there to eat it, like turtles or ducks or, you know, fish or whatever. But nonetheless, even though this is an obnoxious substance, it has potential that is mind-blowing. You can turn this into biofuel. You can turn it into fertilizer. You can turn it into fish food, chicken feed, duck feed. And in worst case scenarios, if you know you needed to survive, you can boil this stuff and you can cook it yourself because it's full of all kinds of proteins and all kinds of things that you know it drains out of the pond that you know basically builds up inside the deal. And you can actually grow this stuff intentionally in pure water. That, you know, you want it to absorb certain vitamins or whatever. So that it's really kind of a miracle of noxious plant that grows in ponds and such. Mostly, when a herring flies in there and eats up all your fish and the turtle eat the fish. And once the fish get all depleted and there's nothing there to compete with the duckweed and nothing there to eat it, then it will overgrow the entire pond. And if you live next to a farm field like I do, and they use all kinds of stuff like nitrogen and anhydrous ammonia to fertilize their field, all that water runoff will come down into your pond and make that water so incredibly nutrient rich that this stuff will just grow like wildfire. It will double every 2 days. So if you skim off half of it, it'll all be back within 2 days. It'll be just as full as it was. So you're never going to get ahead of it doing it the way that I'm doing it. However, as somebody with a business type sense and understanding of what they could do with this stuff, could literally turn what would normally be an obnoxious pain in the neck because you want a beautiful pond into a financial empire. You could turn this into the best fertilizer out there, you know, compost, turn it into biofuel, turn it into fish food, turn it into a marketable substance that could literally generate a lot of money. And that's just one tiny example of something that would be obnoxious. Thomas always talks about a plant called kudzu that will also grow like wildfire. There's also hemp. If hemp was industrialized, that's another one that there's like 50,000 products you can make out of hemp. So the answers are all there. These are just three little examples that don't even scratch the surface. And if you want to talk about free energy, duckweed, there you go, man. There's a self-replicating fuel system, a self-replicating food system. People are literally buying this stuff, $5 for a little Ziploc bag so that they can put them in their aquaponic system and feed their fish and also filter the water as well. If you go to any pond that used to be stagnant and you push away the duckweed and look down, and you'll see that that water is clear to the bottom, crystal clear to the bottom, because what that duckweed does literally filters the water in that pond. And, of course, now you'd also have to be ensured that you don't have any toxins going into that pond, because duckweed will also filter the toxins out of the water. So with that said, a homemade water filtration system utilizing what nature uses to literally clean up a pond that is out of balance now becomes the perfect filtration system for pulling every type of toxin out of the water. Once you got this water all cleared up from the duckweed, then you filter it off again. Now you got perfectly clear drinking water right there in your yard. So, you know, if you paid attention in basic science and you had a little bit of understanding of different mechanics or some plumbing and stuff like that, there is no reason whatsoever why anyone on this planet should ever have to go and drink dirty water. There's no reason why anyone should be homeless or anybody should be starving to death, because just in that one tiny example alone, you figured out a way to feed them, you figured out a way to give them heat, you figured out a way to give them electricity, you figured out a way to give them fresh water. Just with that. That's why I call it mad science, folks. Because it's so doggone frustrating to literally know that there's a government organization out there such as NASA who is supposedly able to do all these wonderful miracle things and can't even put a camera on the moon. And yet here we are on this planet and there are people drinking dirty water. There are people that can't have food, that don't have a home to live in. And we have access to knowledge and technology such as I've just explained. Now you can understand why old Shaziz gets frustrated and why I call it mad science. We have the technology. We have every answer to every question to resolve every single issue under the sun. Now I challenge anyone, anyone on this planet, including the world's greatest scientist, to come out here and prove me wrong. Do it. Prove me wrong. Show me where it is that I'm wrong. Show me where I am stupid and I don't know what I'm talking about. Because if you got the greatest engineers in a budget of $53 million a day, and you can't resolve one single issue, I got little kids running around my house for my grandchildren and stuff that have digital HD cameras that take better pictures than NASA, for Pete's sake. $53 million budget, you should be able to buy the top of the line gizmos. And why am I coming down so hard on NASA? Well, because out there in this world, people have told me that there is a need in this world, that we have an energy crisis, that we have to become clean, renewable, sustainable, blah, blah, blah. You get somebody with a solar panel set up on their property, and suddenly the government ain't getting taxes off of it, and the power company's boo-hooing because they're not making as much money any longer, and then they have to put a regulation out there that says you can't go off the grid. You have to be connected to the grid. Otherwise, you know, it's a safety hazard, or you're messing with the economy. Okay. That's, we got a problem. Steven said, could you not give yourself some ducks, Shaziz? Would that not be more efficient than Skimmer watching the hand crank it? Yeah, it was. Look, I could go out and buy me some ducks. It would be a good deal, but it wasn't. It was a learning experience and a science experiment to find out more about how this stuff actually takes over a pond. And so I figured out, I learned a lot. This stuff will grow so fast that there's no way manually that you'll be able to keep up with it. You'll have to build some sort of machine in order to skim that off on a regular basis. Otherwise, you'll never get it cleared off. If you so much as leave four or five little pieces of duckweed in that pond, it'll grow back. It grows like wildfire. So anyway, you got Thomas on here and you got Raymond on here. How are you guys doing over there?
Yeah, I have no mic mute. Yeah, we're doing great. I like your enthusiasm. I really do. $53 billion a day.
Yeah.
You know, you realize that if that was in $1 bills, one person couldn't burn it all in a day.
Yeah.
Couldn't burn it.
Could you imagine what you mean? Could you imagine what you, me, and Thomas could do with $53 million a day?
Go to the Bahamas and retire.
No, I'm just talking about what the research that we could accomplish with $53 million a day. We could afford to hire an army of engineers and take all these ideas that we've been talking about and make them so.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
After 10 days, we wouldn't need any more money. We'd have all the money we needed to solve all the problems you were talking about.
Yeah.
There you go, man.
Well, and you can see why a person could get frustrated about it, because, you know, there's a lot of NASA lovers out there. And yeah. I used to like NASA until I started seeing, like, it just don't make no sense to me. Because 50 years ago, we were supposedly on the moon. Well, why couldn't we have a video camera on there by now? But the apologists for NASA will say, well, we've been there, we done that, ain't no reason to go back. Well, it'd be kind of nice to see a live stream of the Earth every so often. You know, look out there, wow, that's where we're at, see? And then think of the educational value. Right. You could show the children in school, look, hey, that's where the astronauts landed, you know, and look around this and check out the soil, and you could see Earth from here and that kind of stuff. And if you watch carefully, you might see an asteroid or a meteorite flying by or something like that.
Well, think about this, if they had a camera up there and it was solar powered, the face of the moon faces the sun 24/7.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. I mean, it would run and wouldn't cost a daggone thing to run it.
Not to mention,
where we just make a 360 swing.
Yeah,
every hour.
Not to mention, it would resolve all the conspiracies for all over the world. You know, there. You realize how many people out there say we never went to the moon?
Right.
Do you realize that there are so many different people out there that literally believe that the Earth is flat, and some that believe the Earth is round? Whatever, that we're spinning through space or that we're stationary, it would resolve a whole lot of issues, you know, in pretty much overnight. Because if you actually had a undisputable live video feed from the moon where you could see the rotation of the Earth, you could see the landing site, the astronauts, and then we could get down to some real science instead of all the petty bickering back and forth of what shape the Earth is or not.
Right.
And $53 million, you know, is a lot of money for us. But for NASA, they're getting $53 million a day, and, you know, they threw that $53 million to put a HD camera up there on the moon so that you could see what's going on out there. You know, think about it. That's not a lot of money compared to $53 million times 365 days a year. That's a lot of money, brother.
Yeah.
If I had access to that kind of money, and if I had access to a team of engineers, which I could have access to if I had $53 million, you could pay a lot of people that much. You know?
Yeah.
And there'd be a lot of people working, because you and me and Thomas, we'd have people hired up to do all kinds of different tasks to resolve issues of the world. And these conspiracies like, you know, Planet X or whatever. I guess we'll find out next month if Planet X blows us up, then, you know, I guess we won't know. It had done been done, but nonetheless, all these stupid conspiracies out there in the world of aliens coming to attack our face and eat our brains and probe us and that kind of stuff, or, you know, all the ridiculousness, we could finally get pushed off to the side and get some real work done, you know?
Right.
But, hey, we live in this crazy world that we live in. It's just mind-blowing. Stephen says, good morning, Thomas and Raymond. He said, hey, Raymond, what you doing with Jermaine? He hasn't been seen since this. Oh, you want to know what you did with Jermaine? Did you hide him somewhere?
No. In fact, he put a video on of one of the electromagnetic pulse motors that we built while we were there.
Yeah.
And he put the very first one on. The first one worked on magnetic attraction. Okay, the second one we built, he hasn't made a video of it yet. I coached him on to go ahead and make a video of the second one. The second one worked on both attraction and repulsion.
Yeah, I saw the two videos that he put up here recently. He does some really good work. I'm impressed with Jermaine.
You know what, the thing that amazes me is of all the experiments I've done and made videos of, mine are always crude. Rough, you see everything, blah, blah, blah. But Jermaine, being the artist that he is, he always makes it look neat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We did one, we'd need a block, you know, supports for the wheel. So, me, I would have just thrown a 2x4 up, you know, two of them, and drill a hole through it and run a shaft through the thing. I'm thinking, no, Jermaine's got to take some quarter-inch plywood, cut it all out, make it neat, make it look like a real fancy A-frame type deal and all. I mean, and he does it so fast, he does it faster than I just cut two pieces of 2x4.
Well, then I say that instead of we the people giving NASA $53 million a day, we give Jermaine $53 million a day. He'll get more work done as far as I'm concerned.
But he needs $53 million. All he needs is a couple of $100 a month.
Well, then there you go, man. See, that's a savings for the government.
Well, I do everything I can to support the kid. I mean, you know, there's tools that he needs. I mean, in fact, I just went out the day before yesterday and bought a bunch of test equipment. The boy has no test equipment. You know, no multimeter, no laser thermometer, no laser tachometer. So I went out and bought all this stuff. I'm getting ready Monday morning to take it over to the post office and mail it all to him.
Cool.
Now, he's on European electricity, which is 220 volts, 50 hertz. So I've got him an adapter that changes, it's a 200 watt peak adapter that changes his current to his electricity to American electricity, which is 110, 60 hertz.
Yeah.
And I gave that to him already. And now what I want to do is I want to get one of those, what do you call them? Oh, man, I can't think of it. There's one of the things you plug into a 12-volt battery and gives you American current. 110 pulsating, pulsating AC.
Like an inverter or something?
Yeah, in other words, I want him to have everything he needs.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot afford the best, but I guarantee you that kid will have the best I can afford.
That's cool.
to help. Just jump in there and help.
All right, so I want to go back to a question that Stephen Gibbons put in the chat room earlier. He said, I would like to ask NASA why they didn't map the moon's radiation until 1998. The first global mapping of neutron radiation from the moon was performed by NASA's Lunar Prospector probe in 1998 through 99. You'd have thought they would have wanted to know that before they sent people's loved ones there. So, like, you know, they actually did have a NASA representative say that we can't go a certain distance above the, I think it's like 400 miles above the Earth or something like that because of the Van Allen radiation belt, that we got to figure out a way to safely get astronauts through that, which feeds to the fire of the whole doggone conspiracy, man. If NASA can't do it tonight, today, and the one individual from NASA said, well, you know, we destroyed that technology, and so it's a painful process to rebuild it all again, and blah, blah. Come on, man. They went to Mars. They've been to Saturn. They've been by Jupiter. They've been all over through space. They've been on an asteroid. They've been into Pluto. And they still can't figure out a way to get something back to the moon. Now, all right, regardless of what you believe that NASA's capable of or not, or whether we did or didn't go to the moon, what, don't you see how that would give fuel to the fire of the conspiracy theorists that said we never went?
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, take that $53 million for one day, send a camera up there, show everybody what's what, and then tell them to shut up and get on with business.
Right.
You know, and some of the technology that was able to do what they were able to do, that stuff would be so valuable down here as far as alternative energy and stuff. So, Stephen posted a link in there for NASA's Van Allen probe spot an impenetrable barrier in space. So there's a link now in the chat room that if you want to check it out, it's basically they pretty much said that there's like a big giant donut of radiation around around the Earth. You know, look, like I said before, I don't care if the Earth is flat. I don't care if the Earth is round. I don't care what shape the Earth is. I care what shape the Earth is in. Which means that if the planet is being polluted by all kinds of different toxins that are going to eventually kill off of all of humanity and all the wildlife, and the people say that we need to save the planet, then when guys like me and you and Thomas step forward to say, look, the answers are right there on the table for you, then things need to get done. Otherwise, you know, it's just pure ridiculousness. If you're going to go out and protest save the trees with a wooden stick and a paper sign, and that's all you're ever going to do, well, can you see where that doesn't look so intelligent after all?
Yeah.
You know,
the government tries really hard sometimes to help the people. And, you know, people really need help because they can be wasteful. And I'm talking about all the plastics. Like, for example, they talk about how the United States alone throws away enough water bottles, those little water bottles you see people walking around with, enough to travel to lay end to end, would go around the complete Earth three times every year. Well, there's a simple solution to this to keep people from throwing these away. Throw them in a recycle bin. No. Put a deposit on the bottle. So, okay, you pay $1.19 for a 16-ounce or a 20-ounce bottle of water. Okay? No. Now, all of a sudden, you got a 10-cent deposit on the bottle, where if you don't bring it back, you're throwing away an extra 10 cents. Or maybe it's 15. I mean, hey, it's a deposit. Make it high.
Well, you know,
people will recycle the daggone thing.
You know, the back in time when they used to do that with soda bottles, do you know it was almost impossible to find soda bottles laying around because people would actually go out. Yeah.
That's the whole point. You put a 25 or 30 cent deposit on it. Hey, who's going to take 30 cents and throw it out the car, their car window?
Yeah.
No, you took the floorboard, and then we pass a recycle bin that you put it in there. It reads it that it is a bottle, and it kicks you out 35 cents. I mean, duh. Come on, man.
When look, I was a kid.
But on everything plastic that is recyclable.
When I was a kid, we used to go around. We not only collected up lead weights that flew off of people's car tires, but we also collected up old bottles that had return for deposit on it. And that's how we bought candy when we were kids.
Exactly. You know, before they put deposits on those bottles, the bottles were laid on the sides of the highway where you drove. But when they put deposits on them, like you said, very seldom did you ever see a bottle on the side of the road.
Well, see, I don't know why they stopped doing that kind of stuff, but, you know, basically, I guess because the world is, like, so full of sand that you can make as much glass as you want, and the materials, they just want to be cheapskates, essentially. Instead of utilizing that return for deposit and then re-washing the bottles and reusing them or whatever, even, you know, grinding them down and reusing the glass, you know.
Right.
But they just wanted to save money. That's the only reason why they ever stopped doing that. There ain't no other reason.
Put a deposit on everything that is recyclable.
Yep.
And deposit on it. So people are forced to recycle. I mean, what about your motor oil? Comes in plastic bottles.
Well, just think about, and I'll get back to that in a second, because that's a brilliant one there. Just think about all the people who don't have jobs who would be out cleaning up because they want to get these materials to recycle, you know? And as far as the oil thing, there's existing technology right now, and actually you could build one for next to nothing. You could build, all you need is a pump, a little heat source, and a filter. And you can literally reuse the motor oil in your car just by heating it up. When you heat it up, the viscosity will decrease and the heavies will fall to the bottom and the waters will float to the top. You can skim off the water, the oil will float to the top, the water will float to the bottom, and all the heavy metals will float to the bottom as well. And then you can drain off the water, at the same time drain off the heavy metals, and then recycle that doggone oil over and over again.
All you have to do is everything that is recyclable, put a deposit on it.
Yeah.
Therefore, if anybody's dumb enough or too damn lazy to take it back for the deposit, they throw it out their car window, then somebody that doesn't have, like you said, doesn't have a job, they spend their time walking up and down the highway making a living.
Yeah,
recyclable stuff and turning it in for the deposit. I mean, that's the way it did. When you were a kid and they had deposits on the bottle, you didn't find that many bottles, but you did find them because
the
hole, that jerk that doesn't really want that 5 cents or that 3 cents for that deposit back and throws it out so little kids can walk up down the highway or whatever.
Yeah.
And live it. Or people homeless can walk up down the highway and make enough money in one day to buy something to eat. I mean, come on, man. If it's recyclable, put a deposit on it.
I tell you one thing's for sure. I remember a time when I was a kid, and you go down the streets, and they were pretty doggone clean. They weren't trash laying off in the ditches like there was now because of this.
Oh, my God. You just hit the favorite subject of mine on my vacation to the Netherlands. I have never, ever, in my 73 years of life on this earth, been to a place so clean, so neat. I mean, so healthy. I was there 3 weeks and 3 days. I saw one plastic bag on the side of the road. And then 24 hours later, I went by and it was gone. I mean, there's no trash anywhere in the cities, in the country. You know, you drive through the country in the United States on a well-used public road, there's plastic bags, there's drink bottles, there's soda pop cans, you name it. They have 5-gallon buckets, I mean, just pieces of plastic, whatever. There's trash everywhere you go. So help me, I thought I lived in a clean country. When I came back, I noticed more trash than I ever noticed before, because there's so much you don't notice it.
Yeah.
Until you go to a place like the Netherlands, where everything is so clean, so neat, so manicured, so pedicured. I mean, every yard, the bushes are trimmed, the hedgerows are trimmed and looking neat. There's flowers everywhere you go. I mean, the place is absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeous. I've got a video of driving down the highway. I'm going to put that on YouTube so people can see what I'm talking about. It's unbelievable. I go there. I see all this. That was one of the first things I noticed. So I come back, and now I'm looking where before I wasn't, and I'm seeing all this trash up, and I feel like I'm living in a garbage dump. By comparison, the Netherlands and the United States, you go to the Netherlands for 2 or 3 weeks, and you come back, you feel like you're living in a garbage dump.
Yeah. Well, there's something to be learned from them. And, you know, all that stuff out there, you know, they're always talking about how we're short on resources. We need to do this. We need to recycle, you know. You know, there's got to be a time when you just got to stop talking about stuff and do it. The governments of the world that care about their citizens and care about the way that their property look will basically replicate what the Netherlands did as far as keeping their place beautiful and such.
Yes, they do. Friendliest people I've ever met in my life. I mean, you ride down the road and you see somebody, they don't know you. You don't know them. You wave up, they wave back.
Around here,
90% of the time, and that 1% they don't. They just plain didn't see you.
Around here, putting up a sign says $5,000 fine or something like that for littering. That's the government's way of saying they did something. You know. And the average Joe out there, you know, look, if your yard's a mess, you clean it up, you know. If your world is a mess, you clean it up. It's that simple.
Right.
You know, you can't always wait around for nature to do the job, you know, by itself. You know, even though there's nothing that we've ever built that nature can't deteriorate, it doesn't hurt to pitch in and help out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I'm asking why NASA hasn't put a doggone camera on the moon yet, and I'm asking the governments of the world, why are you wasting money hand over fist, and why are you out there still bombing the planet and doing all the crazy stuff you're doing if you really care about the children and the Earth and such? You know, it's like this. They're telling you to reduce your carbon footprint. Alright? Well, at the same time, they got a mega carbon footprint.
Right.
Think about how many jets fly through the sky every day. Think about how many government officials ride in limousines and corporate jets and all kinds of vehicles all over. You know, hey, we're the government, so we got to do this, you know. But you reduce your carbon footprint, just don't go off the grid because we need the tax money to keep doing what we're doing. That's a hypocrisy, man. And that's why mad science exists, because I paid attention in science class. I learned a few things, and there could be a few things that people out there could actually learn if they paid attention in science class as well. We mentioned a couple small examples of stuff like duckweed. All right, duckweed. You can use it for fertilizer, which means that you can have a really nutrient-rich soil to grow food in. You can use it for biofuel. You can use it for chicken feed, duck feed, fish food. You know, there's so many different wildlife that will eat this stuff. And if necessary, you can eat the stuff. You just gotta know about duckweed that you can't eat it raw, you gotta cook it. It's that simple. Knowledge is power. When you understand how things function, when you understand their purpose in the world, you can utilize what nature's already been utilizing. When a pond becomes off of balance or a stream, These plants will take over and they will begin to refilter the water to rejuvenate the environment, and then eventually some duck will fly down inside there with fish eggs in his or her feathers, and as the duck is bathing in the pond, will literally deposit fish eggs and rejuvenate that doggone pond with fish. So nature will eventually get that pond back into balance again, to where now it has its own ecosystem in it.
What is the vegetable oil ratio content of duckweed? Isn't it up around 35-40%?
Now, I'm not exactly sure, but look, any carbon-based plant life can be turned into fuel.
Exactly, that's my point. Now, it doubles itself every 24 hours, so if you have enough duckweed that it will produce, for example, 100 gallons of diesel fuel, which is nothing more than vegetable oil, then you take 50 gallons worth out, and the next day you've got 100 gallons again.
Yeah, the thing about this stuff.
To have a pond that could produce fuel for your automobile, your tractor, your motorcycle, whatever, just it would have to be diesel. That's all.
Thing about this stuff is not only, you don't need a deep pond to make this happen. You could just make small, shallow ponds that were for basically like when they grow in cranberry. Those cranberry places, they're not very big at all. All right. Well, anyway, everywhere where there's runoff of water that, you know, like off of farm fields or cattle fields or whatever, the runoff runs into this stuff right here. The duckweed filters off that water, which releases it back into the environment, so it's a plus.
What is the depth that you really need, the minimum depth you need to grow duckweed?
Oh, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 inches max.
No, well, I don't know if 5 or 6 inches would do it. Wouldn't that heat up and get really hot in the summertime? I think you need
it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Hot. Duckweed likes that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, 85 degree water wouldn't kill duckweed?
No. No, it'd thrive. It'd thrive. It'd probably grow faster.
Holy cow.
Yeah, this stuff's incredible. I put some in a bucket just to see how fast the stuff grows, and the whole entire bucket side of the top level of the water is just cram packed. And so, you know, as long as there's nutrients in that water, as long as there's something for that duckweed to eat, it's going to be fine. As we've had some screaming hot days out here, so I know them ponds had to have been hot.
I did some research. I haven't done any experiments yet, but I did quite a bit of research on aquaponics. And in that, there were several books that I read and reports that suggested using duckweed as a feed for your aquaponic fish.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If duckweed is that easy to grow, you can actually set up some tuba sixes, set them up on the edge, snail or screw them together, push you down some plastic, fill it full of water, and grow duckweed for your fish.
Yeah.
Therefore, your fish wouldn't cost you a dime to feed. The fish are going to poop and pee in the water, and they're going to feed your plants. So now all of a sudden you're going to have fresh vegetables, fresh fish to eat. And not cost you one dime.
Not to mention that's a free filtration system for your aquaponic system.
Okay, everybody that I know that's messing or playing around with aquaponics is using a fish called tilapia.
Yeah.
It's a lot for tropical fish. So in the wintertime, they have to eat the water. In the summertime, they have to cool that water because it'll get too hot for the fish. Well, why not use silver carp? They're free. They're in the Mississippi River. They are a burden. They're a blight in the Mississippi River. But they grow large. They'll grow to 10, 11, 12 pounds in a matter of less than a year. I mean, that's a lot of food there.
Well,
and they live in the Mississippi River, which gets really cold in the wintertime and really warm in the summertime. So they're very hardy fish. Tilapia have breed once a year, have 250 eggs. Silver carp breed 2 to 3 times a year, and they have 250,000 eggs. And the eggs that you don't hatch can be eaten. I mean, duh. why are people messing around with tilapia when silver carp are the prime fish? They're absolutely perfect for aquaponics. So here's another deal that you're talking about. Food, free food, feeding the world.
So
I mean, people by using their heads. They look at everything. They want it to be hard. If it's easy, it's not worth the effort.
On the minimum depth of what the duckweed could survive in, it would be so ridiculously simple to do an experiment to see, but I have seen places where the water wasn't even but maybe an inch or so deep, and it was covered in duckweed.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, that stuff, even when you throw it out on the shore, will survive for a while because it's full of water.
Holy cow. Hey, I wonder if you could put some in a plastic jar and send it to me so I can play with it.
Sure.
All right.
That wouldn't be no problem. Yep.
My address.
Look around out there in your neighborhood. You might already have some ponds out there that's already got it growing in it.
But that is deep.
This stuff.
Are you already trying to weasel out of some duckweed, man?
I ain't trying to weasel out nothing. You don't even come in and tell you want to agitate.
Oh man! I've got more
send
than
him,
a dozen
duckweed.
I'm gonna send him some duckweed. I'm gonna send you some too.
That's right. I'm gonna send you some kudzu.
All right. Cool. Anyway, you know, those are just a couple examples of plant life that, you know, like golf courses. They don't like duckweed. They don't like watermill. And so they basically use chemicals to treat it, you know, and basically their chemicals that they're using are herbicides, which will kill off the, you know, the algaes and the plant life that they don't want out there. Well, you got to also think of where those herbicides are ending up.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not saying that everyone who owns a golf course couldn't, you know, basically be able to keep their duckweed down. Why don't you just buy some ducks? They'll eat it. You know, put some goldfish in the thing. They'll eat it. Perch.
Yeah.
Keep the right fish in there. They'll eat it.
But, until they get hit by a golf ball, but it will literally kill a mastiff, which is a massive dog, so it's definitely going to kill a duck.
Well, just try not to hit them with golf balls.
They're already trying not to get in there, man. That's the trap.
Well,
they're still.
First, you'd have to ask the question of why it is that their ponds are so out of balance that they're covered in duckweed or watermill. See? And as far as the algaes and stuff like that, if you have plants in there that will compete with the duckweed, with the watermill, and with the algaes, then you'll have a balanced out pond. So if you've got a green pond, it means your pond's out of balance for some reason.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is basically skim it off enough to keep sunlight in there. Even if it takes a month or 2 months to just keep skimming it off, so that the sunlight can get down in there and photosynthesis can occur, and the plants that are on the bottom of the pond can grow, producing oxygen so that the fish can survive. And then put plant fish in there that will actually eat the stuff. So, if you got like a pond that is full of turtles, the turtles will eat the duckweed, but they won't really mess with the watermill. Watermill is like a little small, looks like a little seed that floats on there. And when watermill takes over your pond, it's really obnoxious to get rid of because it's a smaller deal and it doesn't skim off as easy as duckweed until it gets to the point where it actually has a lot of algae mixed with it. And then you grab it with something that you skim across the top of the water and you can drag it in and get rid of it. However, watermill, when you put that out there on the shore and you allow that stuff to rot, I'll tell you what, you couldn't ask for a better fertilizer. That stuff stinks so bad. I mean, it's nasty. When it rots, it stinks. It smells like pig manure.
God.
It does.
The stinky smell from rotting organic matter is the nitrogen. So if it stinks that bad, it must be a really high nitrogen fertilizer.
That's what I say. It would be an awesome fertilizer. Throw that in your garden. You'll have big, giant tomatoes and watermelons and stuff like that. But the point is this, and this is what I've been trying to say all along, and I don't understand why the world just doesn't get it. Something that we classify as obnoxious and unsightly is nature's way of cleaning the environment. All right? When your pond becomes out of balance because maybe you got a doggone herring in your neighborhood that eats every single fish out of your pond. And a herring will. They will literally keep coming back until they clean your pond until there ain't no more fish in there. Then when the turtles move in, the turtles will eat up all the duckweed and they will leave nothing but watermill behind. The watermill will completely cover your pond and it will pollute that pond until the pond becomes stagnant. See, watermill doesn't like to live in a continuous moving or a steel waterway. It wants, like, if you got fresh water coming in at all the time, you ain't going to have no problem with watermill. And probably I'm not going to have no problem with the duckweed either, as long as you got something in there living that's eating it. But once the ecosystem in that pond collapses, all you got is turtles in there, or maybe crawdads. They will literally, the turtles will eat up all the duckweed, leaving the watermill. The watermill will completely cover the pond, blocking out the sunlight, collapsing the ecosystem even further. And the crawdads, who like to live in fresh water, will dig their way to fresh water. So crawdads are going to get the heck out of Dodge when the place begins to stink. Now you got nothing but a dead, stagnant pond. And then the watermill, or the duckweed, will begin to take over until it finally filters it back out and the process starts all over again. So, there's a lot to be learned from that stuff.
Is there nothing to eat the watermill?
If there is, I haven't found it. The watermill's obnoxious.
But the watermill is a plant, right?
Oh, yeah. And it's probably one of the best fertilizers you're going to get.
But now, being a plant, does it contain vegetable oil? Would it make a fuel?
It'd make a perfect biofuel. You could make methane with that stuff.
And the duckweed will make vegetable oil, and the watermill will make gas.
Yeah.
Thank God, man. I mean, you sit here telling people that they can grow their own fuel and cooking fuel and driving fuel in their backyard.
Yeah. That old rotted pond in your backyard is a gold mine. You can feed all your chickens and your ducks and pigs and stuff like that with it. And when you mix the watermill with the duckweed and throw it out there, those wildlife will eat that stuff.
Now, the watermill is a plant. Therefore, you could skim it off or filter it out, dry it, and like you said, use it for animal feed.
Yeah, the watermill will replicate once every day.
And what?
It'll double. It'll double once every day.
Again, whatever. All you need is twice as much as you actually need per day, right? And you just take half of it every day.
Yeah, that's all you got to do. If you take half of that stuff off every single day, then you could take and turn it into biofuel and chicken feed and fertilizer, and then the next day you go back out there, you're ready again. You're never going to run out of inventory.
Dang, go, man. Think about that. Holy cow.
There's Stephen Gibbons posted in there, says, wow, one of the largest lakes in South America was infested with duckweed in 2004. This lake is 13,210 square kilometers, 5,100 square miles. How much more biofuel feed would this make? You're going to need a bigger skimmer, she says. See?
Lord, I love it.
That's what I'm saying. And people want to try to tell me there ain't no such thing as free energy. I'm going to tell you what. If you don't think there's free energy, you're simply not paying attention to what we've been saying.
Really?
You go to the gas station, and at the pumps, you'll pay anywhere from a couple dollars to on up for fuel, from everything from regular to super unleaded to diesel fuel, or kerosene or whatever, and yet you're going to sit around and tell me there ain't no such thing as free energy, and you got a pond in the backyard that is just full of scum? Algae can be turned into fuel. Duckweed can be turned into fuel. Watermill can be turned into fuel. Grass clippings can be turned into fuel. Everything around you can be turned into fuel, and you're still going out there paying the man for some gasoline. There's some people over in Europe who took old waste plastic bottles and turned it back into petrol, a.k.a. gasoline.
Oh, Lord.
Man. This, like, gives me a headache, man. Literally. Because I paid attention in science, yet I got a lot of trolls that want to tell me how stupid I am. I was trying to get rid of the duckweed. I was researching why it is this stuff won't go away. And I figured it out. That nature's trying to clean that pond. Now, if I want to speed the process up and have a beautiful pond again, I will assist nature, and in the process, nature will assist me. It will give me some free fuel, some free fish food, some free fertilizer. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, what more can you ask, man? And tell me that if I know this, that the mainstream energy industry doesn't know this? Seriously? Everybody talk about we're going to run out of oil, you know. We got to become self-sustained. Well, right now, there are a whole lot of waterways in this world that are out of balance. So they are being basically overtaken by nature to try to clean them back up. When you see this happening, that should be a red flag. That means that you don't have the proper wildlife in that pond that would normally eat that material. To some extent, you need duckweed in there to help your little fish survive so that the birds like the herring can't see them. They'll have a little bit of cover. They can run up underneath there. But if all these lakes and streams are being overtaken by this, that should be a red flag to humanity, because that means that something in the environment is breaking down to the extent that it is no longer sustainable for fish and wildlife to be able to live in there. So if you got a pond full of this stuff, then chances are you probably ain't got the right fish in there. You may have some fish in there, but you probably ain't got the right fish in there. And if it is allowed to go too long, the sunlight will be completely blocked out. The watermill and the duckweed will still survive. However, anything under that layer will no longer be able to survive, because the water will become too toxic or too oxygen depleted, and it will not be able to live. So by understanding how this system works, you could keep these ponds and these lakes in perfect balance. You could utilize the algae that you are taking off of these ponds to turn into useful products. See, all these farmers out there using these really highly nitrogen-enriched fertilizers and anhydrous ammonia and stuff to treat the fields so that they can grow big, healthy crops. When the rain comes, all that runoff has to go somewhere. And so when the runoff goes down into your pond, it throws the chemistry of your pond out of balance. When that happens, and you got predators that are basically cleaning your pond out, and you got all this really highly nutrient water, this stuff will grow like wildfire and basically collapse the ecosystem within that pond. It's that simple. So, folks, the resolution's here. If you wait around too long and you don't do nothing about it, eventually you won't have no fish in your ponds, period. And the only thing you'll have left over would be turtles that eventually you probably wouldn't have those either, because they need some food to eat as well. They'll eat up all the duckweed in the pond. I know this for a fact because I got one pond that's just loaded down with turtles, and I actually intentionally threw duckweed in the pond to compete with the watermill and the other algae in there so that the thing would start to balance itself out. However, the turtles ate the duckweed faster than I could put it in there, so I'd actually have to put a whole lot more than what I put in there to get that to start to compete with the other plants in the pond. So gradually I'm bringing this pond back to life. I'm introducing fish to it, I'm keeping sunlight to the deal, and introducing different types of plant life to the water that will help to benefit the pond by balancing out the chemistry in the pond, therefore bringing back the ecosystem. So it can be done. Yeah.
You forgot to mention how good turtle soup tastes.
Ma'am, I've got a friend in that pond called Goliath, and I'm not eating turtle soup.
Oh, man.
Goliath is a huge turtle. He's got a head on him, big old giant head on him. He's a big turtle.
You don't mess with him. You leave him there to breathe. Eat his offspring.
How rude. You can't eat your friend's...
Turtle soup. And that is
some good. Well, anyway, there you go. There's a way that now you could actually benefit by working in harmony with nature. And if you take care of nature, nature will take care of you. It's as simple as that. So, I'm asking the government of the world, and I'm asking NASA, why are you guys wasting money? Why is it that you say we got all these problems, but we can't seem to resolve any? I'm 52 years old, and I've been hearing about starving people on this planet for all my life. And I sit here and tell you about something as simple as a plant called duckweed, which is just one tiny little microscopic fraction of all the solutions available on this planet in order to restore this planet back to its natural beauty and to ensure that the environment is clean and healthy for everyone to live in. And what do I get for my efforts? Trolls. And it's obnoxious. That's why I call it mad science. So, Thomas, you got any thoughts on the matter? Or did you go to sleep?
Thomas!
Man, he must have went to sleep. What about you, Raymond?
Oh, man, I'm liking what you're talking about. What you're saying is the
man,
food and fuel they need.
Are you in the other room?
Yes, sir.
Well,
I'll check in there in a minute.
I'll wait till you get back.
Alright, good deal.
Anyway, folks, we got all the solutions. NASA's got a $53 million budget. If we had a $53 million budget and an army of engineers, there is nothing that we couldn't accomplish, because we got all the answers right there in front of us. Whew. You're not going to run out of crude oil. It's not possible. You're not going to run out of water. It's not possible. You're not going to run out of resources, nor are you going to run out of food. It's not possible. Ridiculousness is running amok in this world of today. Nature's trying to clean up the mess that humanity had made. In the process, it means that instead of a fish sandwich, you might end up eating a duckweed sandwich. Because nature's only going to give you what nature can give you. And if you kill off all your fish by polluting all your waterways, by throwing all of this doggone pesticides and herbicides and everything that you throw down on your field in order to keep the bugs off of your crops or to make sure that your crops grow bigger, while that's occurring, you're polluting the waterway right next to you and throwing that waterway out of balance. And so, if the farmers out there wanted to work in perfect harmony with nature, and the government really wanted to cut back on greenhouse emissions and such, then the farmers could invest in a program, and the government could invest in a program that would take what they caused and turn it into a plus by utilizing it to make biodiesel for their tractors and their machinery. So, you'd basically be, you know, able to still do what it is that you do, but in the same sense, you'd be able to utilize the material that was made because of what you did as fuel, as a food source for your wildlife. Duckweed is highly nutritional for chickens and birds and fish and turtles and so on. But if it's allowed to run amok, it essentially turns your pond into just that, muck. The bottom of your pond will be black and nasty. And if you look at the bottom of a pond, and then you look at crude oil, you'll see something in common. Wonder what that is. Do a little research and you might just figure it out. Eventually, ponds will become so stagnant that they will literally build up masses of CO2 up in the mud. And then all it takes is for one little occurrence to happen, because now it has this huge gas pocket up inside there of CO2 and methane. And you'll have this thing that people talk about, but it's rarely seen because it usually happens almost instantaneous, where a pond literally rolls over. The pressure builds up in the, underneath the mud until all this escapes and the pond literally rolls over. For those who ever witness it, it can be terrifying. And there are some people, there are places in this world to where people in villages have literally died because all this CO2 pretty much built up underneath this lake, and then a cloud of it engulfed their village, and nobody could figure out what happened to them until some scientists realized that there was a CO2 buildup underneath the pond, underneath the lake, that basically came out and suffocated them. So if you understand how nature functions, number one, you ain't going to suffocate because you're going to be careful. But number two, you'll have everything you need to produce all the food necessary, perfect fertilizer for free, instead of having to go out and haul in manure or buy high-dollar fertilizers. You already got it. You know, put a pond right next to the farmer's field and let him pay for your fertilizer and your fish food, because that's what he's doing. As soon as he pumps all that anhydrous ammonia and nitrogen and stuff down into the ground, and then turns around and plants his crop, and then when he cuts his crop down and all that bio waste pretty much flows down into your pond, throws your pond off balance, and the duckweed begins to take over, and the watermill and the algaes and all that kind of stuff, he just gave you fuel. He just gave you fertilizer. He just gave you food. Imagine that. You heard it first on Mad Science. What do you think, Raymond?
I love it.
It's just like, you know, that's just one, like I said, that's just a tiny microscopic fraction of all the solutions available to this world, if you want to choose to use it. By assisting nature in the cleanup process, You can take the byproduct of what nature has already produced in order to clean up mankind's mess and utilize it. And then from that point on, now that you know how nature is going to function, you can deliberately grow this stuff. You can use it to feed your aquaponic systems. You can use it to fertilize your gardens. You can use it to turn into biofuel that you can then in turn atomize and be able to get a perfect burn on your diesel engines. You don't even have to get rid of your internal combustion engines. You just turn around and engineer them to function perfect, you know, clean, where even the exhaust is recaptured. 53 million dollars, NASA. Put a camera on the moon. Show everybody what's what. And for the governments of the world, stop sticking it to the citizens. Stop giving them trouble for going off the power grid. You told them that they had to reduce their carbon footprint. They made the step to do so. You said that there was a need. Those who paid attention in science stepped forward here on the Mad Science Show and other places out there. And so we're here to help you learn how to utilize something you should have already know how because you should have paid attention in school. And we're here to help you understand how to resolve the issues that you say we have. We have an energy crisis? Nope. Are we going to run out of crude oil? Nope. Are we going to run out of fresh water? Nope. Is the world doomed? Maybe. But if we are doomed, it's because of stupidity, lack of common sense, complete and utter ignorance. Because right now, nature is literally showing you how to clean it up.
Amen.
It's that simple. You know, pay attention to what nature does. If a pond goes stagnant, nature throws some duckweed and watermill on there and some algae to clean it up. And, of course, you're not going to have fish living in there because there's a lot to clean up. And so you start assisting nature, allow some sunlight to get in there, start introducing some fish in there that will eat this stuff. By that time, the fish and the pond will begin to heal itself, and you will end up with a beautiful pond again. And if you own a golf course, and you're paying people lots of money to come in there and spray herbicides and pesticides on your golf course to keep it all pristine, number one, you're wasting money. You could be getting your golf course to literally pay for the electricity that you're using or whatever club you got there. Minus the golf club, because golf clubs don't use electricity. Talk about the actual building. We need an electric golf club.
You know, they use electricity for the golf cart.
Yep. They? You got to charge your golf cart. So, you need something to run your generators to charge your golf cart.
There you go.
Hybrid electric golf cart fed by duckweed.
There you go. Now you're cooking.
Oh, I need a breath. Somebody besides me start talking.
I don't know what to say. You've covered just about everything. It's, what do you say? If you don't believe in free energy, you're just not looking.
Yeah, that's simply it.
Yeah, and the thing is, what we're talking about is so easy. The average person doesn't even think about it. It's very hard for the average person to believe that something easy could be good.
Yeah.
If it's not hard and difficult, then it's not worth your time and trouble. Duh.
Well, check this out.
Yeah.
There's a tree that grows around here. It's a hedge tree. They call them hedge balls, hedge apples, horse apples, Missouri orange, or whatever tree.
Proper name is Bodark.
Yeah. Well, this doggone tree can be obnoxious because it drops these huge green hedgehog balls or apples or whatever you want to call them. Horse apples. Drops them on the ground, and, you know, these things, when you pick them up, are like sticky as all get out. I mean, obnoxious. But that wood that the tree grows, not only is a tough wood, but it's a beautiful wood. It's great for firewood. You don't have to burn nearly as much as firewood because the stuff has oil in it and it burns hot. If you burn too much of it at one time, you'll literally burn a hole right through your wood burning stove. You'll melt the stove. So that I'll tell you about power potential. And the deer, they don't like the hedge apple, but they do like eating the seeds inside of the hedge apple. Something inside there. And there's actually a company out there that will accept the hedge apples if you bring them to them, because they are making beauty cream out of the oil that they get out of the seeds in the hedge apple.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So the hedge apple actually has a value.
Sure. As bugs don't like it, so you can put hedge balls around and the doggone bugs don't like it, maybe because it stinks or maybe because it's sticky or whatever, for whatever reason, and it does have citric acid in it. So you could actually use the citric acid to literally make a battery with.
I know you did that once before, didn't you?
Yeah. So even... even what you would think would be a totally obnoxious deal has so many benefits. And once you burn the hedge, you not only produce more fuel, but you produce wood ash that can be used for multiple different purposes. So in the process of burning the stuff, you even made more resources.
Right.
So,
is that wood ash used from burnt wood that you use for in place of lye to make soap?
Yeah, you make lye soap with it. You can get your car out of a snow ditch with it.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll give you traction. There's so many different things that you can do with it, but science says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? Well, it turns into lye soap. It turns into traction control for your car to get out of the snow or ice. It turns into creosote, which if you allow to build up inside your chimney, will literally create a chimney fire and burn your house down if you ain't watching it.
Yep.
So you got to actually buy this stuff that will... basically make the creosote not flammable. Ain't that amazing? You burned firewood and created a flammable material and made some wood ash that you can use for multiple purposes, one of which was lye soap.
Right.
Is anybody paying attention?
I really don't. Golly, it's just too damn easy, shit is.
Yeah.
Too easy. I mean, what the heck? If it's easy, nobody wants to mess with it. They want the hard stuff.
I have proved over and over and over again that energy is free. I've showed multiple different methods by which to get it. See, everybody thinks about electricity. And they think about, well, you know, you can never get out more than you put in, blah, blah. You know, we need over unity. We need 0 point. No, we need efficiency. That's what we need. And as far as electricity, it's all in about how you're going to get it. You're going to either use coal to boil water into steam to turn turbines, which then in turn turns generators that are strong enough and able to keep up with whatever kilowatt usage that the city and the people are using. So you're trying to run an inefficient system, so you need lots of fuel to do it. Make the system efficient, and then it takes less fuel. But nonetheless, you don't have to use coal. You don't have to use nuclear power. You can use all kinds of biofuels. And you can make these biofuels so incredibly efficient by the way that you introduce them into a combustion engine that they don't even put out any exhaust waste. And you can use hydrogen technology from water to literally do the same job. So all your fuels are free. Every fuel that you want to try to use, whether it be oil, whether it be coal, whether it be duckweed, watermill, kudzu, hemp, or whatever, grass clippings, every bit of fuel that you need to run your machinery, your internal combustion engines, is free. Now, if you don't own a coal mine, then mow your grass, save the clippings, turn it into fuel. If you don't mow your grass, well, then wait for the forest to grow up, take out all the dead trees, turn it into ash, and turn it into creosote. Take the creosote, turn it into fuel. Burn the wood. Build you a steam generator. There's so many different ways in order to utilize everything around you in order to generate electricity that it's ridiculous. The option is this. The alternative is this. Allow the nuclear industry to do what the nuclear industry does and to continuously store radioactive material, because they only use 2% of all the radioactive material is actually used, because once it becomes it's not efficient enough to boil water efficiently enough to run steam turbines, then they classify it as depleted and they put it in the cooling ponds for 10 years. 10 years they go into cooling ponds to deplete even more. When the radioactive decay finally gets down to the point where it will no longer boil water, then it can be stored in a container that can be buried under the ground. Still radioactive, but now it's not going to boil water, so it's not going to be able to pressurize the chamber that would cause an explosion. It's as simple as that. Simple as that. And we got enough radioactive waste on this planet to literally run everybody's electricity probably for the next several thousand years. But nope, we got to continue to mine uranium. And we got to refine it into highly charged radioactive rods that we in turn run our nuclear power plants. And then we got to complain about why it is that we have all this nuclear waste. Then when an incident such as Fukushima occurs, now the waters are all, you know, basically contaminated with radioactive material because of a hydrogen explosion that spit everything out in the air. And the doomsdayers come out and say that we're all doomed. We're all going to die. And I'm sitting here rubbing my forehead, slapping my face, trying to say, are you kidding me?
Really?
Come on, man. You can filter the water. You can take all that radioactive material, which is still producing heat, and you can utilize it for thermal electricity. Every bit of all the energy that from all the radioactive waste could be making thermal energy. It's not going to boil water. But it will run a thermal couple. It will run a thermal pile. It will run a Peltier element. It will basically keep things warm.
And it will boil water under a vacuum.
Yeah. Because the temperature in the vacuum is, it doesn't take nearly much heat to boil water in a vacuum.
Exactly. And the thing is, the steam coming off the water doesn't have any real power to it, but it has power as steam in the water, causes the water to move. And that's all you need is movement.
Yeah.
Movement for magnets over a coil. And that's what I've been working for several years on a coal steam turbine. And it works. It works fantastic. It's unbelievable how well it works. It takes so little heat. Your body heat will actually, with a coal steam turbine, actually generate electricity. Enough to run your television.
Well, I think that this podcast should go viral. I think that everybody should send it to everybody and his brother, just so people can hear what we said, and so that they can, and I can, and everybody can challenge organizations such as NASA and the governments of the world to sit down at the mad science table and tell us why it is that we're wrong.
Right.
Bring your best. Bring all your Michio Kaku's and all your science, Bill Nye, the science guy, and bring them all to the table and tell me why it is that what we're saying can't be done. They sent a probe all the way to Pluto. 9 years it was in space. 9 years later, it was still producing over 200 watts of power. Sent a signal back that gave us a picture of a planet that is so far away that if you were standing on it, number one, you'd be cold as all get out. Number two, you'd see a little tiny light in the sky, which is our sun. Now, either NASA's the biggest fibber on the planet, or they have the best technology in the history of time that they're not sharing with the world. Period.
Right.
What do you think of that?
Really? I mean, how? Look, you're saying duckweed doubles itself every day.
Yeah.
So, if you had 1 pound of duckweed, how much duckweed would you have in a month?
Well, you'd have an incredible amount, because I've been trying to get this stuff off the pond for a month. I've been out there scooping and scraping and skimming and testing, and I got a pile out there. It must be at least 800 pounds of duckweed, and I still have my pond covered with duckweed.
Hey, I got an idea.
What?
I got some screen, it's not wire, but they call it screen wire. But it's screen to make screen doors with.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you a little bit of that and a submersible pump. I've already given you a solar panel. Take a solar panel, and the solar panel will run this pump. This pump will pump 400 liters of water an hour.
Wow.
It's submersible, so you put it down with a floating device that holds it right at the level the duckweed grows, and let's just see if it'll pump the duckweed without jamming up the pump. And then you pump it into that screen cage and actually filter the duckweed out. And then take the duckweed, dry it in the sun, and feed that to chickens to lay eggs for your family. How's that?
Yeah. See, there's a lot of different really cool systems out there which can be replicated for actually getting rid of the duckweed.
Uh-huh.
But this experiment that I've been doing my intentions weren't to clean the duckweed completely off. It was to see how fast that this stuff would actually really grow.
Right.
And what I found was that it will grow faster than you can get it off manually. So by the way that you're talking about doing it, you could literally clear that thing off and, you know, still, as long as there were some remnants of this duckweed in there, if you run out of duckweed, give it about a week or two and you'll have more.
Right, there you go. There you go. That's
yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
And now you got fish and ducks in the pond, so they're going to help.
Yep.
You'll never, ever get rid of it. Because the ducks, your pond is so big, two or three, four ducks can't swim all over the pond in an entire day. They can't cover every square inch of it. So therefore, if there's one or two pieces left, tomorrow there's going to be four or five. Yeah. And the next day, 10 or 12. And the next day, 25 or 30 or 40. I mean, come on. It would just keep growing until finally some of it reaches the pump or ducks see some of it. You got to keep it under control. Yeah, let's do that. Let's work for it. I need to get a trash pump. Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got one. I've got 6,000 gallons of water an hour.
Well, what I need to get, some of the plastic 50-gallon barrels, and I need to basically cut out drainage holes in the bottom of them.
Right.
And I need to be able to pump that duckweed and water mill up into those with a screen that will capture it but allow the water back into the pond.
Right.
And fill these 50-gallon barrels up with the duckweed and water mill so that it could actually be turned into fertilizer and whatever you want to use it for.
I got the barrels, I got the screens, I got the pump.
Yep.
That would make a great video showing people how they could actually do it.
Yeah, and instead of trying to spray herbicides on there, you know, or, you know, whatever, you could actually turn this into a profitable deal that would, you know, basically pay for a lot of different things.
Chemicals we want to use Mother Nature.
Yeah.
We want stuff out. We want to use solar power for the energy to pump the stuff out, filter it out, and actually use it once it's filtered. Use it for food, for animals. Use it for fertilizer, for the garden. Use it. Actually use it. Why not?
Yep, and then just get our resident chemist to figure out how to turn it into a perfect biofuel, and then there we go, man.
I guarantee you Thomas could figure out how to do it. Yep. If anybody could, he could.
And turn the the rotted stuff into methane gas, and that you can turn around and use that to run an internal combustion engine with.
Right.
Huh.
Yep.
There's so many possibilities, folks. It's just flat out ridiculous. You know, there ain't no excuse for this world to be in the mess that it is. I'm sitting here telling you that nature's already showed you how nature does the job. You know, nature has lightning's tree, lightning is nature's tree trimmer. So when things get out of whack, you know, things get overgrown. Lightning strike comes down, burns off a bunch of forest, and then the ash and nitrogen-rich soil has fresh growth, and nature does what nature does.
Exactly.
Those rain where rain's needed. When a pond or a lake becomes out of balance, nature throws some stuff like we just mentioned on there, starts cleaning it up. Nature's been doing the job. Mankind's been slacking.
Yep.
And so even in the process of nature cleaning up after you, you could still benefit. Now, that's pretty doggone impressive.
They don't call it Mother Nature for anything, because when you were a kid throwing your clothes and toys around, it's Mother that came back and cleaned up behind your mess.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Mother Nature, when man screws up, if he just gets that heck out of the way, Mother Nature will clean it up.
Somebody get the head of the local environmentalist on the horn and have him sit down with me for an hour or two and let's have a talk. Let's have a conversation. I want you to go out there and find every single radical environmentalist that you can find who's out there protesting everything under the sun. Bring them together. Let's have a rally. All right? Bring all the environmentalists of the planet to me and allow me to sit down with them for a couple hours and have a conversation. Number one, they're worried about coal. They're worried about fossil fuels. They're worried about chopping trees down. They're worried about all kinds of stuff. They're worried about companies throwing pollution in the rivers and all this kind of stuff. And they're out there protesting and raising a ruckus. I could tell them how to fix it. I can tell them how to get the companies out there to want to fix it. Now, if you was a company and you were making money on a specific product, and then you found out that in the process of making your specific product, there was a byproduct that you could also make money off of, if you think I'm wrong, go back all the way down to the history of gasoline. When they first started making, what do they call it, kerosene for lanterns. They couldn't use the gasoline that they got from the crude oil because the gasoline was too volatile to put in a lantern. And there really wasn't no use for it, so they literally dumped it out on the ground. It's just too flammable.
Yes,
and once the internal combustion engine came around and they figured out, whoa, man, we could sell this too. They didn't stop selling kerosene.
Yeah.
They didn't stop selling motor oil. They didn't stop selling. They just added it to the deal. So if a company out there figures out that they can make money off of their trash as well as their treasure, folks, their bottom line is that they want to make money. And if you show them how to make money off of their trash, they're no longer going to give you their trash.
Hands straight.
That's right. The farmer has got good intentions. He's growing food, but in the process, he's trashing your pond.
Well, hey, I'm glad you mentioned farmers and trash as another man's treasure. But what about the millions and millions of acres of sweet corn that are grown in this country every year that are go to canning company to can up sweet corn, but the actual stalk itself of the sweet corn, when you pick the sweet corn, the stalk has more sugar in it than the corn has starch. But with starch, you have to change it into sugar in order to make alcohol. Duh, pick the corn, squeeze the sugar out of the starch, now all of a sudden you've got sugar and corn, you sell the corn, you made your cash crop, now you take the trash and you squeeze the sugar out of it and make alcohol from it, but you still have the stalk left to rot down to make fertilizer for the next crop of corn. I mean, duh, come on, man.
Yep, and I put something out there. I put a message out there about a month or so back, and I told everyone out there to ask me about the Zero Waste Project.
Right.
So far, I hadn't had anybody ask me about the Zero Waste Project, but you just explained in graphic detail the Zero Waste Project. In a perfect world, nothing gets wasted. Everything gets recycled. Everything gets used. That's what nature's been doing for all the time that this earth has been in existence. Nature has been recycling everything under the sun, including you.
Okay, can I go a little bit further than that?
Yeah.
I can go a little further. Instead of planting corn, the next year you plant soybeans. Now, when you harvest the soybeans, you harvest them just a tiny bit early. Before the leaves actually dry, you get them when the leaves start turning yellow. When they're 2/3 yellow and 1/3 green, that's when you harvest the soybeans. Okay? Now you've got your cash crop of your soybeans, but they're a little bit too damp to store, so you have to put them in a dryer, which costs money. Duh. But you also harvest the hulls of the bean.
Yeah.
The hull is just as much protein as the bean. The protein content of pound for pound of the hull is just as high as the bean itself, and that can be dried and fed for animal feed. Now, the fact that you've harvested all these plants, now all the plants, the leaves and the vines, are laying on the ground 2 or 3 days, the sun dries them out, and you have absolutely unbelievable high-protein hay for your cattle and your horses.
Yep.
In fact, the protein in the leaves and the vines is so high, you would have to be very careful how much you let your horses eat, because horses get too much protein, it causes their hooves to founder and grow funny.
Well,
I mean, it's zero waste.
That's
it. You take the manure and the cattle manure and put it on the field for fertilizer. Zero waste. Absolute zero waste.
Well, nature ain't wasting nothing. Nature's never wasted anything.
It's man.
Yeah, it's mankind wasting stuff. And that's the problem. See, it's your waste that ends up polluting the waterways. It throws the chemistry of the waterways out of balance, that then in turn you try to rectify by putting herbicides down to get rid of the duckweed and the watermill and the algae in the pond, when if you paid attention to what nature was doing, nature was trying to tell you that your pond and your waterways are out of balance.
Exactly.
You didn't pay attention, so you spent lots of money trying to battle nature, and nature won. You lost, nature won. Your wallet's empty, nature's fine. It's that simple, folks. Doggone it, if something don't look natural, then probably chances are it ain't natural. It's that simple. If you had a beautiful pond for years that was thriving with wildlife and all that, and then suddenly, year after year, this thing is corroded. It's got green swirls of duckweed all over it, massive lakes that are just dead, dying. Right. Nature's trying to clean that thing back up. That's why the duckweed's there. That's why the watermill's there. That's why the algae's there. If you throw something in the pond, and the pond will begin to try to break it down, you'll get algae's that will come in. They basically clean house. Every system has its own cleaning system. All the bugs in the world are there for a purpose. They clean it up. The worms, they clean it up. Everything. Every bit of wildlife out there has a purpose, including the obnoxious mosquitoes.
Right.
But if you allow water to become stagnant, now you have a million or a billion mosquitoes buzzing around your face every day instead of having just a few once in a while.
Right.
Because everything's out of balance. If you take all that stagnant water away, the mosquitoes don't have a place to live. One thing amazing about duckweed is mosquitoes won't lay their eggs in a pond full of duckweed.
Really?
That's right. Dragonflies will.
Dragonflies eat mosquitoes, right?
Fish eat mosquitoes. Little tiny fish like the minnows and stuff, they eat mosquito larvae.
Yep.
But mosquitoes will only get in stagnant water as long as it's not covered up with duckweed.
Huh.
So, there's a bunch of answers there. There's a bunch of solutions. Now it's time for the world to enact these solutions and make this world a better place. Make it a cleaner place. Make it a more comfortable place to live in.
So where people are actually dying of starvation, starving countries, you can take just a few, two or four, some plastic, build some duckweed pond, put some minnows in it, and feed the whole daggone country.
Do you know what I'd be willing to bet?
What's that?
That in a lot of these countries where the people are starving, that there probably are tons of ponds from all the runoff of sewage that goes into waterways that are covered with duckweed and algaes that could be turned into fuels and that you could use to feed fish with.
Yes.
When you got a pond, like a septic system, and the septic tank takes all the waste, and it has the good ones will have like two tanks. The first one will be like the heavy solids, and then the next one will be the nasty water, and then the nasty water will run off into a pond out there, the potty pond, and the potty pond will cover up with algae, and it will filter that water out so that by the time it gets out into the environment by EPA standards, it's classified as fresh water. Now, why would the EPA classify that as fresh water at that point unless they knew that the duckweed and the water mill were filtering that water to where now it wasn't not safe? You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So, even the EPA told you. Nature's told you. You know, that the scientists that designed the septic system told you. Now, if you got direct sewage running into your water supply, that's obviously a bad thing. But if you got a stage between the time when that water comes around, for Pete's sake, they say astronauts filter their own waste in order to be able to have water on the spaceship.
Then why don't they share the knowledge of their system so that the private people can actually build it and have plenty of fresh water?
Cool. Simply Steve's in the chat room and he says, I am implementing these ideas. Cool.
Is there a website that you can go to that NASA puts out and shows people how they do things like that?
Well, Steve's over there.
If there's not, why can't we push and people want to protest. Okay, let's protest. NASA needs to put up a website to show how they do certain things in detail for where the average person can do it.
Yep.
Steve, you want to protest, protest. Otherwise, you want to protest something stupid like the saving the trees and all with your paper sign and your wooden stick. Duh, if you used half that energy to actually do something other than gripe and complain about it, then things would get done.
Yep.
Protesters, to me, are ridiculous. They're just loudmouth people that just want to complain. They don't want to do anything.
Yeah, loudmouth lazy people. They don't want to get involved. Anyway,
actual practical use.
Simply Steve's over there in the Republic of the Philippines, and he's teaching people over there about hydroponics and aquaponics. And he said he's implementing these ideas.
He's protesting. He's doing.
That's right. Well, see, here's the thing, folks. I've offered and issued so many challenges to government agencies and NASA and environmentalists, Bill Nye the Science Guy. Send him on over, all right? Go out there and get Neil deGrasse Tyson. Get them all. Get all the top dogs on the log, all the highest well-known scientists of the world, and bring them over here and tell them to tell me in front of all of you where it is that I'm wrong. Gather up all the environmentalists of the planet who say they want to save the planet so that I can tell them to put up or shut up.
Exactly. Put up or shut up.
Yeah.
And all you protesters out there, put up or shut up. You're spending a lot of money traveling to places to protest this, protest that. Take your daggone money, pull it together, pick two or three people and send them somewhere where they can do some good. Have actually learned how to do aquaponics. Send them to countries where it's possible to use aquaponics and teach the people there how to do it.
Yeah.
Steve does it, and no one supports him. Financially, no one supports him. I mean, you know, duh, and he's on his own.
Teach
he's
them.
He's not protesting a daggone thing. He's doing.
Yeah. Teach them. Teach them how to utilize nature's cool tool, such as duckweed, to filter their water out.
Right.
Because that duckweed will pull toxins out. Now, obviously, if you got toxins going into your pond, the duckweed's pulling it out, you obviously don't want to eat that duckweed because it might make you sick. But if you can utilize that duckweed, even with the toxins in it, for biofuel, you see what I'm saying? If you got the technology to literally test for different chemistry, then you'll know whether the duckweed is safe for whatever consumption. It's obviously going to be safe for mechanical consumption because it's not biological. Now, if you want to use it for human or animal consumption, you'll have to know that, you know, it's not toxic because it hasn't absorbed all kinds of crud that the factories have dumped into your water.
The thing is, though, if the duckweed is eating the toxins, it's actually using it to produce more duckweed, so therefore it cannot be that toxic. My point is the chemistry. You're taking the duckweed and taking something toxic and turning it into chemically something that is not toxic.
Bingo.
All right. Now we're cooking. It's like, you know, the silver carp has a bad rap because of the name carp. Because a lot of religious people don't want to eat a bottom-feeding fish, a bottom-feeding animal. Duh, carp don't feed on the bottom. Carp do, but the silver carp is not an actual carp. It's a fish that it eats plants and algae, duckweed. It eats plankton. Plankton is a little animal that looks like a shrimp, but it's not a bottom feeder. It's got a bad rep because they call it silver carp. It is not a carp in that it is a bottom feeder. It is not a bottom feeder. And the texture of the fish, it is so delicious. It's unbelievable. Now, the reason they call it a carp is because it has hair-like bones like a carp. It's thousands and thousands of little teeny tiny bones. No matter how big the fish is, the bones don't get very large. So the thing is, it will grow to 10, 11, 12 pounds. When you fillet it, there's no bones in the meat. Now all of a sudden you have all this calcium in the bone and a little bit of meat between the bones, and you compost it into fertilizer. So you're getting fertilizer, feed, meat. I mean, come on, people. Use your head. Do some research.
Well,
we were caught for the best thing that's ever happened, and it was a pure accident. It doesn't eat other fish. It doesn't eat game fish. It depletes the food of the game fish. That's the only thing you got bad about silver carp. They proliferate like unreal. I mean, 10, 100 times more than game fish. I mean, you take a big mouth bass or any kind of a bass or a perch or a crappie, they only lay 200, 300, 400 eggs once a year. The silver carp lay 250,000 eggs each time they lay eggs, three times a year. I mean, fish eggs are food for human beings, for other fish.
We threw down the gauntlet.
Make lemonade. When life gives you crap, make fertilizer.
Yep.
Life has given the Mississippi River crap. It's called silver carp and big head carp. Neither one is an actual carp. Duh. Turn it to a good thing.
Well,
I mean, that gum.
We've been joined by Steve from the Philippines. We threw down the gauntlet, Steve. We dared everyone to bring the best, biggest, baddest environmentalist and their best of all the best scientists in the world to the table to tell us why it is that we're wrong. So, you know, we'll see whether or not they got the guts to show up. Somebody from NASA. Somebody from the government, somebody from every government, somebody from every environmentalist group on the planet, come here and tell us why it is that we're wrong if you got the guts to do so. Somebody paid attention in science class, and it obviously wasn't the government. So how you doing, Steve? Are you there?
I'm alive.
Yay!
I don't know how good this internet connection is, but it's going to be pretty shaky.
All right, well, you're all right so far. Tell us what you've been up to.
I've been fixing stuff redneck style in a convent. I've been working with Baptist preachers. I've been giving away more stuff than you would believe. I've developed a system that can germinate 750 seedlings using 500 watts in 21 days.
Cool.
Wow.
Using T5 fluorescent strips, believe it or not.
Well,
but currently what we're doing is there's a lot of people here at the minute with cancer. So we've kind of found our niche in providing cancer patients with organic food.
Hemp seed oil.
Local market prices. Yeah, right, mate. You get shot for that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm working within the structure of the society I live in.
Yeah, and that's always a hindrance.
Believe me, I could promote the values of that till the day ends. And it's good. But I have to work within the structure of society that I'm in.
Well, and I guess that's the aggravation for all of us here on Mad Science, is because we're sitting here telling everybody the solutions are right there in front of their face, and they're not implementing these solutions. And you're over there in the Philippines trying to benefit people by sharing the knowledge that you've researched. And that's all we're trying to ask everybody else to do out there.
Shazoos.
Yeah.
I'm working on every level, from government minister to somebody that's living in a tin shack.
Cool. Send them a copy of this show. Let them hear what I had to say. Tell them I said peace and love and all that.
This.
Yeah.
I've a buddy that lives less than 200 meters from me that has a solar powered stick welder.
Cool.
Yeah, when you talk about redneck science, he's taking raw power out of batteries and welding with it.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
It's got 120 amp hour of batteries, and he's welding with it. And the electricity company is getting electricity from.
Ah.
And he said, God provided it. He gave it to my solar panels, I give it to the metal. It's a good arrangement.
Yeah. Well, see that.
I tell you what, that is one redneck setup.
Well, that's good to hear that, necessity is the mother of invention, and if you can use solar power to do that, then that's a good thing. Look, folks, I've been telling everybody forever and a day, energy's free.
Oh, is this?
Yeah.
You'll be proud of me.
What'd you do?
I went down to a convent. It's some nuns. Well, they run an orphanage for Yolanda victims. There was a big typhoon here about 3 years ago that killed about 20,000 people in 10 minutes.
Dang.
But during the brownout, this convent is looking after a lot of the children that lost their parents. I managed to fix their generator with yellow nylon cord, because the guy that serviced it didn't service the rope on the pull cord and the retraction spring.
Yeah.
So I had a bit of yellow rope in the back of my car, and it took me maybe an hour to work out exactly how to twist the spring so it retracted the cord. And it was a pure redneck repair. I'm really, really proud of it.
Hey, Stephen Gibbons got a brilliant idea in the chat room. He said we should create the Mad Science Emergency Squad that goes out to disaster zones and uses mad science and ingenuity to show people in disaster zones how to produce electricity and build water filtration and water delivery ram pumps, electric Blue Cross. Maybe we can get charitable status. See? I like that. We need to do that.
There was an 8.0 earthquake in a city about 50 miles from here. I mean, I felt the shock myself, sitting in my computer room. My wife said to me, Mrs. Simply, so what are you doing? I said, I'm not doing anything. And she said, well, why are you rolling to and fro across the floor? I said, I think it's an earthquake. Don't get too many earthquakes in England and Ireland. I know California has its fair share, but it's not common in my neck of the woods. So we ran out of the house, and the floor looks like a spider's web of cracks. You wouldn't believe it.
Dang.
But we went up to the worst affected area, because there was a big mudslide that came down the side of a hill and wiped out an entire village. And there were 89 families affected. And between the Rotary Group and the Blast Motorcycle Group, they donated 4 2,000 litre water containers, 89 20 litre water containers as well for portable water. They gave them toothpaste, toothbrushes, sanitary towels, you know, all of the kind of basic stuff that you need. And we drove 50 miles into the middle of an earthquake zone with a huge truck and the police escort, basically to help the people there. And it was local people that donated their own money to do it. So when you see all this business about third world countries, you know, they don't do nothing. They do. I've been there. I've seen it with my own eyes. Their own local people are putting a hand in both the people that have been worst affected.
Yep. And so all those other people out there who are using these folks' tragedies to benefit for supposed charitable deal, and all the governments out there that say that there's a need around the world that wants you to send your money that you've already sent to the government, It's time for people to put up or shut up, man. You know, these folks are doing things, amazing things, with what they have to work with, and there ain't no reason why the rest of the world can't take some of the advancements and technology put it in the right place at the right time to benefit it, even to the extent, did you see there's a potential that something could happen like this mudslide? We got ways by which we could actually build buildings and retaining walls that would make sure that people weren't injured in such a deal. You see what I mean? I mean, the solutions have been there all along.
We went out last week to a farm where they're producing vermicast. This is worm castings. It's probably one of the best organic fertilizers you can find. All natural. There's no chemicals in it. No messing around. I picked up 300 kilos. Which is kind of a lot for a little Mitsubishi Pajero to carry, but we made it back without losing the tire, so I'm going to go mad about that. My little motor car's 25 years old. But then again, when you've got a speed limit of about 60 kilometres an hour, you don't stress yourself too much. Anyway, the point being, we're using the vermicast to germinate vegetables in such a large quantity. Local governments are starting to pay attention. I've worked with the Department of Agriculture. I've worked with the city mayor. I've worked with the local projects, if you want to call them that. They call them barangays here. But I go out guerrilla gardening at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Cool.
So I germinate plants, and people wake up the next morning with all these plants planted all around the place in common areas. And where did that come from? You know, there wasn't any string beans here or tomatoes or eggplant or any of the rest of it yesterday, but they're here now. And the lady that lives across the road from me that runs the little store said, oh, that's that crazy English guy, just enjoy it.
I love it. You are my hero.
We need more people to be doing that.
I've been doing that for years, Shaziz. I mean, most people go out at 3 o'clock in the morning with a balaclava to steal or something. They don't go and plant people's hedgerows.
We need more people to do that. We need more people out there doing guerrilla gardening and guerrilla charity. And we need more people bringing common sense to the table. Look, folks, it was the mainstream media. It was even the alternative media. It was the government. It was the protesters, all the environmentalists, and all the people of the naysayers of the world who said that there was a need. We're here to address that need. Steve's over there in the Philippines. He's literally addressing that need. We're asking for people, if they really seriously want to resolve the issues of the world, to put up or shut up. It's that simple. Shouldn't have to keep saying this over and over again. Yeah.
When the brownout came, I had my emergency package, which was basically a bunch of various technologies that you could build from scrap. Three people have made your redneck generator.
Cool.
That I know of. And they've shared it with their friends. And you know what? There's a lot of people that are running basic systems off of your redneck generator.
See? It wasn't a waste of time.
If three people that I know of... if three people I know of built it, you can guarantee in the Philippines where there are no replacement parts. I got my car electric window fixed with a cigarette butt dirt and flaming super glue.
Well, there you go, man.
I could go into detail, but it would take too long.
Well, folks, look, I started off this show questioning NASA. I started off this show basically asking why it is that NASA can't put a doggone camera on the moon after being supposedly standing there 50 years ago. But it wasn't just about NASA. It was about the governments of the world and the people of the world sitting around complaining about all the negativities that are going on in this world, all the reasons why we can't do this. We're going to run out of fresh water. We're going to run out of oil. We're going to run out of food. The world is overpopulated. I've heard every single BS line in the whole entire history of Hoxahooey. These all top the chart. We're not going to run out of anything. Nature has already showed us how nature recycles, replenishes, and rejuvenates all the things that we take for granted. Now, if you want to help nature and you want to have that beautiful pond near you, then take a little bit of life lessons from what nature's been trying to show you all along. If your pond is flat out green, well, chances are it's out of balance and nature's trying to clean it up. So if you want to speed that process up and have a beautiful pond and create a little bit of extra finances in the process, then help nature out. Help nature clean that thing up. Make you some biofuel. Make you some fertilizer. Make you some fish food, chicken feed, people food if necessary. Help somebody in this world to not starve because you used a little bit of common sense and basic science.
In the words of Raymond Lawrence Head, Dallas, Texas, the boomer, when life gives you crap, make fertilizer.
Yeah. Mad science.
You know what, Raymond?
Yeah.
I've picked up 300 kilograms of worm poo, pig poo, chicken poo, and banana trunks.
You know what they used to make out of chicken poo?
What?
Race car fuel.
The vermicast that they make. Yeah. The vermicast that they use here are a combination of potassium, phosphate, nitrogen, NPK, lots of trace elements. It's black gold.
Yes, it is, Steve. I read somewhere that worm castings are 8 times richer in nitrogen than before the worm actually brings the dirt into its mouth and extracts the nutrients from it to support its life. I have suggested to lots of different women that like to have indoor living plants to pick up these little red wiggler worms and put 2 or 3 of them in their plant. And then just a pinch of cornmeal once a week for food for the earthworms. And within 2 or 3 weeks, their plant is 3 times greener. The flowers are bigger, brighter in color, everything because of the earthworm castings.
Yeah, and so, there goes a point.
You know what we're doing currently?
Yeah.
Raymond, this is going to wreck your head.
Go ahead.
We're watering the plants with rice water.
All right. All right.
That deal.
The earthworms, yes.
That deal about putting earthworms in your plants. That's just another little tiny example of paying attention to what nature's doing. Why it is that certain grounds are fertile and other ones aren't. If you go find a piece of land that's all dried out and cruddy, you won't find any earthworms in that land.
Right.
Because it's for the last 3 months I've been taking a trip out to the president of the local farmers association. It's about 50 kilometers from here, because I've been going out every single week and checking the progress, because it takes about a month to make vermicast, pure 100% vermicast. And I've donated the guy a pH meter, a TDS meter. You know, I've been really closely working with him, because he sells me all the stuff I'm growing my food in. So I want to know what he's doing with it. The guy's got about 130 organic chickens. He's got about, I think, 25 large pigs. And he's constantly breeding in them. The guy's really nice. His name's Lolo, if you can believe that. But I'm running up a steep hill with a 100-pound weight a vermicast on my shoulder, and they can't believe it, because most of the westerners here are kind of 60, 70 years old and married to a local girl that's 25. So when they meet somebody that's not an old age pensioner that can actually bounce a 50 kilo bag on his shoulder and run up a hill with it, they're quite surprised. But I'm working with people working with me as well, they've given me a huge amount of help. Because what they see is that I don't want to take something, I want to give. I've got green zebra tomatoes growing right outside my front door. I've cherry tomatoes. I've got about six different varieties of tomato, about three different types of eggplant. I've grown sweet corn in a bucket, which is not supposed to be possible.
Well, the people of the world can learn by example, man. I'm telling you.
They can learn. No, shit is. They can learn by trying.
Right.
Yep.
Get off your backside and give it a try. And Raymond, I can see your video. Thanks for putting your pants on.
Hi. You're welcome. I forgot I have a camera on.
Anyway, the whole thing that I've been trying to put out there to people out there, $53 million a day for 365 days a year, that's a lot of money.
For how many years? That's a whole lot of money.
With that kind of money, and the right engineering crew, and the people willing to get results, you could solve every single problem on this planet. And that's just one agency. That's not even all the agencies out there. All the government agencies out there, the alphabet soups and all that. You know, there's a war on this and there's a war on that, and you know, whatever. You know, it goes on and on. We've heard this stuff so many times throughout the history of our time. You know, like I said, I'm 52 years old. I'm still hearing about people starving in the world. Why? Why? I just told you, with one little obnoxious weed in your pond, you can resolve a fuel problem. You can resolve a fertilizer problem, a food problem for your wildlife and your chickens and your ducks and your turtles. What are you waiting for? Seriously.
She says, can I give you a positive story?
Yeah.
About mad science. We went down to a convent about, beginning of June. Around about June 12th. And they had a big open day to sell their organic produce. The girls that live in the convent make this jewelry out of laminated newspaper, and they've been trained. They've got food dehydrators from the United Nations. They've got all this stuff. But they keep giving them stuff that doesn't really help. We went up there and we gave them about...
Uh-oh, I think we lost Steve. You still there, Steve?
Yeah, he said he was having internet connection problems.
5,000 organic, some of the plastic soil covering that stops dehydration of the soil, because a lot of the plants were dying. But I gave a mini version of my artificial light germination.
Yeah,
they don't just walk with it. They will.
Cutting out real bad,
because
Steve.
Because she has just taken it and run with it.
Cool. Huh.
And to me, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to point people in the right direction that have the motivation, intellect, and interest to do it. And they go with it.
Yes.
Well, that's the whole purpose of the Mad Science Show, is to tell people that the options are available and to get you to run with it. You know? I guess I'm sort of like a motivational speaker for the world, but I'm getting fed up because I'm trying to see results. Steve is seeing results in the Philippines. He's seeing people actually implementing things that we talked about here. Now we need the rest of the world to do just the same. You know, bring the doggone United Nations here with a bunch of translators and let's sit down and have a talk. We can fix this world.
If it wasn't for the United Nations Development Program that donated the equipment to the guy that I buy the worm castings from, the vermicasts, I wouldn't have them.
Right.
Well, bring them to the table. Bring somebody, get out there, be a diplomat, get everybody to the table. The people out there complaining about the world being running out of fuel and food and all that kind of stuff, bring them to the table. Let's talk some mad science. Let's talk some common sense.
That's
what
it's about. Yeah. I mean, I've always had a kind of a negative view of a large organization that takes lots of money and doesn't really do much with it. But I've seen some of the positive impacts here. But I'd like to see a lot of positive impacts everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Let's like get rid of all the reasons why the protesters want to protest.
Right.
You know, look.
Well, I tell you what made me laugh to this. They gave the guy a shredding machine for shredding all this organic matter because the red burglars or African night crawlers, as Raymond said before, have only got tiny little mouths. They gave him all this equipment. I gave him an $8 pH tester. Because you know what? All of the equipment they gave him, he can't test the pH level to see what quality the soil is. And that's crazy.
Yeah. So we're setting in the golden era. Like, I use your phrase all the time, Steve. You talk about how we're like sitting here with the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips, and we're having to sit here and talk about, you know, common sense things that could be done in order to resolve the so-called issues of the world. Like I talked about, you know, the doggone people that are out protesting Save the Trees, and they got a wooden stick and a paper sign saying Save the Trees when they could be out planting a tree instead of doing what they're doing. It's not productive to get out there and protest the government, the guys and gals with the guns that are going to slap you down, throw you in jail and fine you and make more money for the same system that you despise. If you really want to get results, pay attention to what nature's already showed you. Period.
Well, let me say this to the snowflakes of the world. If you really think that three different toilets are important, go to a place that's had a major landslide, major earthquake. Because I spoke to one guy that said, I don't even have a pot to pee in. I don't care about what label's on the bathroom. I don't even have one.
Well, there, you know, there are people out there that live in like tiny house communities that have utilized all this kind of alternative energy and alternative methods for doing things and natural ways of making composting toilets and stuff. There are so many ways that we can literally make self-sustained communities that is just mind-blowing. And all we hear about is, oh, well, we got to become more sustainable. The governments ain't going to do it. The people are going to have to do it if it's ever going to be done. While I understand that nature is in charge and you're just like a passenger on the ship, and if you throw your trash on the floor, nature will pick it up. You may have to sit up to your neck in trash until nature gets around to it because you already made such a mess that nature's still working overtime trying to keep up with what you made. In the meantime, if you reach down and pick that piece of trash up, you might find out you can make some fuel out of it. You can make some fertilizer out of it. You can make something useful out of it. You can repurpose it. That's what nature's been doing all along. When are you going to get your act together?
Well, Shaviz, my current area of study is converting lead acid batteries to alkaline using food grade alum.
Yeah, pickling
because
salt.
Pickling salt.
Yeah.
I need about 25 amp hours a day because I've gone out and I've bought myself 2 kilowatts of solar panels and I've got another 3 kilowatts coming. So I've got about 5 kilowatts of solar power production a day. Oh, sorry, an hour. For 10 hours a day, that's 50 kilowatt hours a day I can produce.
Well, you live in pretty much a tropical environment, right?
Yeah, let me think. Maybe 200 miles north of the equator.
Okay, so how many plants out there have citric acid in them?
Enough, believe me.
There you go. See, you got enough citric acid to make all kinds of batteries.
Yeah, but I'm trying to go away from the acidic to the alkaline. That's the point. That's why you're using the aluminum.
That'll work too, but I'm alum. Just saying, you ain't going to run out of power.
No, I'm not. Believe me.
You got the sunlight.
I'm working with people that have hectares and hectares of land. And I'm kind of saying to them, well, look, you can try this in a small area. If it works, move it on.
Yep.
Expand it.
Well, see, here's the thing. In every single industry, not every bit of their product actually makes it to market because, you know, once you pull it off of the plant or the tree...
People can't grow tomatoes here. I've green zebra tomatoes, cherry tomatoes,
yeah,
plum tomatoes, all growing all around my house. I spoke to a guy that runs.
Oh, you're cutting out again.
I was speaking to a guy today that runs supposedly an organic center. And I said to him, I bought 20% shade netting. And I put 2 thermometers. Yeah, I'm sorry, mate.
Uh-oh, we lost him again.
Yeah.
I think we lost Thomas, too. Anyway, that's a shame because he's doing some really good work over there.
Yes, he is, and there is no one supporting him.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is find out what he needs and see if we can't get some of our listeners to help him out. I am the first volunteer. I will donate whatever he needs that I can afford.
Yeah, I'm willing to do so as well. The point I was trying to make there earlier was that in every single industry out there, including farming industries, all the different places that grow all kinds of different stuff, not everything that is made actually makes it to market because the moment it comes off the tree or the vine or the plant or whatever, you know, nature starts to take it back down to whatever it was before. And so with that said, even in the waste products of the industries of things that don't make it to the market, you have fuel potential, you have fertilizer potential, you have battery technology, all kinds of, it's just, it's mind-blowing to me of how much we have available to us that, you know, people just don't get it. I don't understand. So, it looks like you're back, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Steve, what is it that you could use or need to help you in your work? Because, son, I'm serious. You are my hero. And if there's anything I can do to help, I want to. Okay? Is there anything that you need or could use to help you in your work? Anything. What is it?
Currently, at the minute, we're doing research. We're trying to do all the things possible the wrong way.
Right. Okay, you said something earlier about you gave a man a pH tester to test his compost, and it helped him drastically, and it only was $8.
Every time the guy wanted to test his worm castings, he had to go to the Department of Agriculture and wait 3 weeks for test results to come back.
Uh-huh.
They're really cheap. They're a two-pronged analog pH tester that costs about $8 from that I can buy. I can buy it off the local eBay system called Lazada.
And they now, to you, right?
Yeah. I've had issues with that, Raymond. I've had issues, believe me. Sometimes it arrives, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it arrives broken, and I've seen them kicking it around in the back of the truck. But generally, small items are okay. What we're doing at the minute is we're doing everything the wrong way to find out what the problems are.
Right.
Because I know exactly how to do it the right way.
Okay, you said something. You're helping a lot of different people that have hectares and hectares of land. And wouldn't it help them if you could, if you myself and others wanted to help you, to give you the money or send you the PH deal where you can give it to these people and teach them how to use it? Wouldn't that help or not?
Well, I tell you what would really, really help at the minute would be if people could collect up the 1.5 watt solar cells that you get on the top of those cheap throwaway garden lights. You know, the solar powered garden lights?
Yeah.
Because what I'd like to do, I'll send you guys a video of it after we've dropped off the call. There's 100 steps down to the convent, and it's an insanely steep hill, and they spent their entire budget on putting concrete steps. I know, because I carried 100 weight of vermicast down the 100 steps a couple of days ago, and it nearly crippled me. I was up down steps 4 times in one day because I'm not allowed to smoke in the convent. You know, you're a burden for your own cause. But what I'd like to do is to try and daisy chain enough of these solar cells to give them LED lighting on the steps at night.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would be very cool.
And that's redneck science.
Yep.
It won't cost them a penny. It's a donation that's not going to cost anybody any effort. Because you know what? So many of these things, the cheap Chinese lithium-ion batteries die, and they just throw them away. But instead of throwing them away, send them to me.
Yeah, and you ought to make you a pulley system that will, you can set the bag on that and then basically send it down on, you know, like those ski lifts.
Well, they're actually doing some concrete into trying to install something like that.
Cool. All right, folks. Well, we're down to the wire.
Wait, Steve, do you have a PayPal account that if somebody wanted to help could actually donate money to you?
No.
You don't?
No, I don't.
You need to set one up, son.
Yeah, so we can try to see if we can get some help.
I guarantee you there's a lot of people out there, and I am one of them, that would love. I mean, I can't send you a lot of money. I could send you $40 or $50 now and then, maybe even $100. But I would love to say, hey, I help. But I can't do anything from Texas, okay?
Yeah, and everybody out there listening, instead of sending your money to NASA, send it to Steve. He's actually getting something done.
No, go. No, guys, help doing something. I mean, he has gotten off his dead duck. He is doing. He's not complaining. He's not walking around with a sign. He's not protesting. He's not bitching and whining. He's doing it. Those of you that want to help, you can't go there. You don't have enough money to go there. Duh, help him.
Yep.
That way you're actually doing some good. Some good.
All right, folks. We're down to it. So, you know, with that said, been another show of mad science. Look, help us out by spreading this podcast around. You know, get in contact with Steve and everybody else out there that you know is doing things for people and researching, and try to help them in any way that you can. And spread this message. Spread a little bit of common sense around the planet. You know, if the protesters, all the environmentalists want to get together and have a round table, you know, we got a place for that too. So bring them all together. Bring all the government officials to the table. Bring them all to the table so we can talk mad science to them and show them what's what we've been telling you all along. The answers are right there in front of you. It's so ridiculous how many answers are in front of you. You got a solution for everything. If you want to pay attention to nature and basic science, then every bit of what we've been talking about would be resolved. There wouldn't be no reason to protest. So with that said, you guys got any last words of wisdom before we bail out of here?
Yes, I do. Steve, set up a PayPal account and check on it.
Raymond, in answer to that, people are pretty smart here, but they lack knowledge.
All right.
You point them in the right direction, with the decent technology, they will do it.
Well, share this show with them, Steve.
That's what I'm looking for. Do you have any idea how much money and items that I have contributed and donated to people, and they just sit down and grow dust, or they don't use the money for what I gave it to them to use it for? I mean, I would love to help you, Steve, because I know you would use it. Whatever I can send you, money, items, equipment, knowledge, whatever, I know you'll use it for good, and you will use it. And that's why I'm more than willing to send you anything and everything I could possibly afford to help you with.
All right, folks.
Raymond?
Yes, sir.
I've run up and down those 100 steps 20 times, and I still don't know any kung fu.
Well, send him some kung fu tapes. Folks.
Good night, guys.
Take care, Steve and Raymond. Well, everybody, that's the Mad Science Show. Peace and love.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Can you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.